Hello, and welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. Ooh, damn. Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to the podcast. Today is October 14th. Happy Columbus Day, one of America's most gangster-ass holidays. I should also let you know, I've learned this from past experience, the post office and the bank are not open today. Because you know what? Fuck non-Indigenous people, too. Before we get into our regular programming for today's show, I have a couple of things that I was hoping I could go over with you. I hope you'll indulge me for 10 to 15 minutes here. First of all, I know we've been a little light on podcast content lately. I have been spending most of my time making videos, my favorite thing, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that. But we do have a couple of new series in pre-production, and you're probably going to start hearing the first of those episodes in the coming week. I am working on a series on communication with our friend out in Hawaii, Daryl Becker. And at the end of this week, I'm going to start doing some interviews with Gino Denning for a series on the Trivium. So I hope you'll look forward to that. I do want to talk about this YouTube project that I've been working on, but if you don't mind, I'd like to start the story in a slightly different place. Over the course of the last week, a story has been coming across my desk from a variety of different sources related to the Common Core curriculum. If you are unfamiliar with Common Core, it is this U.S. Department of Education initiative to try and standardize curricula on a federal level. It is nothing new. It is a recycled attempt from the past. And I just want to point you to a couple of places you could look if you want more information. Episode 225 of School Sucks Podcast is called The Road to Hell is Paved with Central Plans. And if you want to get the bigger picture here, I would also recommend episode 230 called A New World Order, where briefly in that show, Richard Grove, Kevin Cole, and I discuss the tax-free foundations, and this relates to a revelation brought to G. Edward Griffin by a congressional investigator named Norman Dodd, who in the 50s was part of the Reese Committee looking into these tax-free foundations and what kind of influence they were having on American, first of all, policy, but also on thought generally. And there were some disturbing discoveries there. So tax-free foundations and Common Core, things worth looking into. Peg Luxick, Who Controls Our Children, great YouTube video if you haven't seen it, a good thing to share with other people who might be starting at this point to get concerned about the federal government's control over education as Common Core is coming right out into the open. But the stories that were brought to my attention this week, both of these dated October 8th. I've got a couple open right now. The headlines, first from The Examiner, Common Core Assignment. Remove two amendments from outdated Bill of Rights, and the other one from the Daily Caller, Common Core Assignment makes sixth graders scrap Bill of Rights amendments. So I actually just wanted to share the piece from the Daily Caller. Both cover the same material. I'll link them in the show notes. And the reason why I want to go over this, first of all, it's leading into what I want to talk to you about, kind of a larger story here, the genesis of this YouTube project. But also, I think these stories have some utility. You know, maybe you know a conservative, right? Maybe you've got that great aunt, let's say, who sits in the corner at family gatherings and knits and talks about what a nice man John McCain is. You know, so, well, you know what? Actually, forget her. But maybe you know a young conservative that might still be capable of changing their ways. This might be a good piece for outreach. So again, from the Daily Caller, a Common Core Assignment makes sixth graders scrap Bill of Rights amendments. It's written by Eric Owens, who is the education editor at the Daily Caller. Well, America, if you thought people behind Common Core couldn't possibly be more moronic or tone deaf, you were wrong. A Common Core worksheet handed out this week in a sixth grade class in Bryant, Arkansas, that's a risky place to try this, required students to ditch two amendments from the Bill of Rights, reports eagnews.org. Students were also told to plug their rights eliminations by creating a visual aid that could act as a clear representation of your proposal. That's, it quotes, taking language from the assignment itself. EAG News says the assignment is part of the Common Core State Standards Initiative, an attempt by educrats to standardize various K-12 curricula across the country. This fall, 45 states and the District of Columbia have begun implementing the curriculum. These are the handouts from the federal government to state departments of education that we've talked about before, the strings attached that quickly turn into chains. The assignment's instructions, which include hideous grammatical errors such as the use of plural pronouns they and their to refer to the singular noun government. Well done, Daily Caller. Tell students that, quote, the government of the United States is currently revisiting the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution. It certainly is. Unknown federal officials in the assignment, quoting again, have determined that the Bill of Rights is outdated and may not remain in its current form any longer. Consequently, the sixth graders were asked to, quoting again from the assignment, participate on the National Revised Bill of Rights Task Force. They were required to, quoting one more time, omit to and add to amendments to the Bill of Rights. At least one local parent, at least one, is livid about the rights scrapping assignment, reports Digital Journal. When I asked my child what the assignment was to teach her, she had no idea, claimed the parent Layla Spears in a written exchange. She didn't even understand what the amendments meant. How can she make an informed decision when she doesn't understand what she's throwing out? That was new to me. I also did not like the fact that the teacher used, quote, in the quote, you have been selected to help a special committee bullshit, unquote. Spears also observed that her daughter and the other kids in the class were apparently never taught anything about the actual process of amending the Constitution. There's nothing about how an amendment is ratified, wrote Spears. Many children will think the Bill of Rights is amended and can be changed by a special committee instead of an act of Congress, she said. I know my child will not think this is true since I have made it my mission to be very much involved in her education. The end. So this is a development from just the last week, but I have actually been thinking about Common Core and, you know, past attempts at centralizing control over American schooling for about a month now, and it actually began with a conversation that I had with Jan Ervin, who is the host of Gnostic Media Podcast, and he was encouraging me to interview a colleague of his who has this special expertise on CAFRs,
Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports, CAFR. They're like the AFRs that, you know, corporations have to fill out, but they're for government. And Jan says, and I agree with him based on what I've seen, that understanding the CAFRs
will lead to all kinds of revelations about what's really going on with state and local governments and, of course, Common Core itself.
As far as where money really goes and who benefits.
But I decided to table that for now because, first of all, my attention is currently going to other places. I mentioned these two series and this video thing that I'm working on that I'm getting to that. But also, I don't think, unfortunately, that Common Core is going anywhere anytime soon. And I think things are probably, and I don't mean to be a cynic, but I think things are probably going to get a little worse before they get any better. So we will have an opportunity to delve into that in the future, and I do plan to do so. But after I had the conversation with Jan, I said, well, you know, if this is something that we're going to pursue on the show, I should refresh my knowledge of the, you know, the history of these attempts at centralization and subversion over American schooling, perverting it and distorting it and corrupting it even more than it already was from the very beginning. You know, we're starting with a system that is not good when it comes to the needs or the volition of individual people. So, my go-to guide, one of the most fantastic resources I know of for this kind of contextual history, is a book that I've also mentioned numerous times on the show before. I've read from it. The Underground History of American Education, written by John Taylor Gatto, I believe, in 2001. It's actually what you're going to hear us talk about on the show today. But I go to The Underground History of American Education, just looking for ideas. And I had always used the Underground History as an informational resource. You know, I don't think I've ever sat down and read the book cover to cover, even over, you know, a period of several sittings. The way I've interfaced with the book has always been, you know, I need information on something, or I need some fresh ideas about something that I already know a little bit about. So I'll either go to the index or the table of contents and look for that thing specifically. I recently picked up the book and just started reading it from page one, and I realized that I had in the past apparently overlooked what a wonderful personal story it is. You know, Gatto's discovery puzzle pieces that he's attempting to assemble after he left teaching. And Gatto is just such an eloquent writer, and he can really turn a phrase and put together a paragraph. And I said, you know, it's a shame that all of this great writing is just sitting in this book that most people will never, ever read, or, you know, go and find a PDF of online, or there's even an audiobook version that we're going to talk about on the show today, or download that and listen to that. And even people who do read the book are usually just using it, from my experience anyway, as an informational resource and not for pleasure reading. And I said, this is quite pleasurable. This guy is really a great writer. So this brings us to this new video project that I have decided to work on. As I started to go through the book and realize all of these great little nuggets, you know, that could be turned into like movie trailer style videos, 3, 4, 5 minutes long, I decided to get to work on that. Episode one is currently out. It's on our YouTube channel, School Sucks Podcast. It is called Before You Send Your Child to Public School. I was so excited about making this video that I almost immediately made part two and part three, and I'm going to put one of them out a week, just like I used to do with this old podcast here, and I really feel a renewed energy, a renewed purpose. I have a great deal of appreciation for Gatto and his work. I feel like this is a nice way to show it. I feel like this is a great way to bring his message and this message generally of the problems with government schooling to the short attention spans of YouTube, to a new and expanding audience. That's the place to do it. And, you know, most of what Gatto talks about in the book deals with the problems, the issues of government schooling. In case you haven't noticed, in case you've never been through a comment thread on YouTube, it is a place for problems and issues. But I want this podcast, on the other hand, to be a place for information and solutions and education. I want this to be constructive. I've always wanted that. I feel, you know, a lot of it has been constructive, but that's where I want to put our focus from this point forward. So these series coming up with Gene and Daryl, I'm really excited about. And, you know, we'll use this audio presentation to deal with solutions, and we'll use that video presentation to alert new people to the problems with schooling. So that's the plan. So please, if you can, I would really appreciate it if you would support this project. You go to YouTube, School Sucks Podcast. The first video is called Before You Send Your Child to Public School. Some of you might be on the road. You might not have access to a device where you can watch a video in HD with a decent pair of headphones on, which is what I think you should do. So by now, you do probably have some kind of capture device, Evernote or some other program like Evernote, where you can make a little note for yourself that says, when I get home, watch that YouTube. It's a little more than 4 minutes, and part two will come out today. So if you can support this project, it would be greatly appreciated. And as I've devoted more time and energy to this Gatto project over the last couple of weeks, it dawned on me that back in September, we recorded a show about this very topic, about the underground history of American education. A listener wrote to me and had some questions about Gatto's lack of footnotes. So we discuss it. This is part of a much longer show. I have edited it down just to the most relevant parts. The show is available in its entirety on the website in the AV Club, the bonus content section. You just go to schoolsocksproject.com/AV to sign up, or you click the big red sign up button right on the front page. It'll take you to another page where you can see what the sign up options are on that page as well. schoolsocksproject.com/AV. You can click a little link that allows you to browse all of the recent entries. You will quickly realize that you have just stumbled into a chamber of audio and video treasures.
So I hope you'll do that. I'm actually looking through it right now. If you already have access, here's a couple of things I would recommend. Presence and Productivity, Raw Video, Parts 3, 4, and 5. Tony Myers, who worked on that series with me, re-recorded Parts 3, 4, and 5 all in one sitting in front of a very small live audience. And it was one of the best experiences I ever had recording a show. It was a very wild time, a lot of silliness. Going back a little further, bonus show, 9/11 Information Holes, Obedience, and Empathy with Richard Grove, August 8th, 2013. Filmmaking and History Chat with Richard Grove, August 2nd. And, Red Scare discussion with Gardner Goldsmith, available as audio and video. And, you know, if you even go back further, and all these things are sortable by categories, too, right in the main nav bar. The Wheels Off Liberty Archives. My best work ever, available nowhere else on the internet. That's your best work ever, Brett? Yeah, I think so. I'm really proud of those shows. Most people have never heard them. It was a comedy show. Anyway, you know, schoolsucksproject.com/AV. You can see the options. Help out if you can. Check out those videos. And thanks for listening, everyone. Take care. Here's what's going on. A gentleman named Artie wanted to call in to discuss the references and sources in the Underground History of American Education. I thought this would be a good opportunity for us to give one more, at least one more push of Tragedy and Hope's film, The Ultimate History Lesson, Weekend with John Taylor Gatto, which we haven't mentioned in a while. So I'll be trying to call the show on Thursday, September 19th, to get your response about one criticism that I have with John Taylor Gatto's Underground History of American Education. As I was rereading it, I realized that his sources do not seem to be very well cited, at least in the format I'm used to seeing it, with a numerical footnote and then a listing of the respective name of the source at the end of the book or chapter. He made numerous claims in the book that I did not see a source for. I have looked into numerous sources that he did provide, such as the works of Fichte, Addresses to a German Nation, Horace Mann, the works of the Rockefeller Foundation, etc., and I found no reason to doubt the validity of what he says. However, I know that I need to always be cautious of each claim if I can't find a source. I just wanted to get yours and Richard's take on that. Thanks for all that you two do. Let's make it three and add Tony to that.
I was going
to
say, let's get Tony's take first.
Okay. Well, first I'd like to say, where did these standardization methods come from that he's used to seeing little numbers and little reference marks at the bottom of the page, so, and referencing back to the index or, you know, a source that he can then go look up somewhere else? Well, I believe, for example, the APA and the MLA style that I think most people are taught in school these days, these were pretty much standardized in the beginning of the 20th century, essentially by psychologists. The APA style was, there was an argument between two famous, historians. Well, I guess you could call them historians. Titchener and Cattell, I believe. But yeah, I mean, there's a famous argument where Titchener is like, oh man, you're limiting creativity. Funny that he's saying that one. And Cattell, who's a psychologist, is like, we need a way to standardize all this wonderful information we're finding out about the realm of psychology and human behavior. And we need a way to comment on it and have people, you know, be able to reference each other and understand these different writing styles. And so I just find it interesting that psychology was really where the sort of scientific, at least this is for anthropology and the sciences, the APA style. But the MLA, it's similar. It's just more for the humanities, quote unquote. Standardization, although it's seemingly very nice, you know, we want the ability to be able to have ways to reference each other's work, yada, yada, yada. There's definitely a reason why we're kind of inundated with this sort of standardization process, mostly because the sciences needed it in the 20th century, and we kind of know how that worked, ostensibly speaking. Go ahead, Rich. I'm sorry.
Oh, don't apologize. That was a very well thought out explanation that you gave. I was not even familiar with that particular argument. I was familiar with the players, and I can see both sides. So the gentleman who was kind enough to write to you, what was his name?
His name was Artie.
Artie. Well, Artie, I sympathize with you because I too wish that there were more footnotes in there and you could just look it up and be like, wow, I'm really certain, and then go about your day because you're like, that's a good fact. Unfortunately, Gatto likes to do it a different way. He likes to make a point. He's done this work. He's gone through like the 500 books. And if he gives you all these little references and stuff, you're going to have too much certainty after reading his book, and you're going to take it as like a gospel. Instead, he's trying to send you out on a life's journey to start seeking out some of these books that he's talking about, but he didn't give you the direct reference. Now, there currently is discussion on a second edition of the Underground History of American Education, and there has been a substantial amount of work done. It's been undertaken over years. Roland, who is John's partner, has collected 500 books that are the primary sources. He has them in hard copy, and so there's like an addendum. Now, John still doesn't want those notes in his book. He's like, that's fine that those things exist and people are looking for them, but the book is what it is and it shouldn't be changed. And, you know, that's his philosophy.
Right.
So his philosophy is more of, here's this really interesting story, which happens to be fact and it has to be your history, you know, happens to be your history. So you should go out and familiarize yourself with how to look this stuff up in a library on the internet. These things are real. You can go and look them up. There's a couple places in there where I think he muddles a couple different quotes together, but it's not intentionally. It's just because after you've read all this stuff, you know, and back in the paper and pencil days, you get, you know, it's not as we have any, it's easy to look back in, on someone's work and say, well, you know, they should have done this or they should have done that. Cody had sent me a book by Murray Rothbard. And so I read through this book and I was like, well, this is really a superficial gloss on topics that there is really a substantial amount of history on. And why isn't Rothbard doing blah, blah, blah? And so Brett comes in and he's like, oh, you finished reading that book? He's like, what'd you think? I was like, oh, it's, you know, it's all right, you know. He's, and I said something. He's like, well, did you know that Rothbard's dead? And I was like, oh, okay. So he's and that he wrote the book in the 80s. And I was like, oh, okay. So then I start computing, like, what was available in the 80s and what could he have taken from that was, you know, substantial back then and what had been organized. And I was like, oh, he did a pretty damn good job for back then describing it. Because basically he describes like a property. And he's laying out the major landmarks on the property, but he's not giving you too much detail because he hasn't gone to see these landmarks yet. He just knows they exist, and he lays out an accurate map. It's, you know, scalable to this day. You can fill in all the details, but most of it's there.
Mm-hmm.
So then once I realized that, that's a bridge to the libertarian audience because now we can talk, you know, on the same page because Rothbard does talk about the Rothschilds. He just didn't have access to the grovement of resources that we have today.
Right, right.
Absolutely. So. That's well
the same has to go for you know, Gatto. I mean, he wrote Underground History of American Education in 2001, and even back then, what little internet access he had access to,
and the like he's going to know from how to use it. I mean,
right, yeah. Right. So he's going from his, you know, scholarly, you know, a barn full of books that he had collected to, you know, assimilate all this, and he gives a very accurate picture even under the most intense scrutiny. I mean, definitely what he's describing, Prussian education system brought into America. Yep. I mean, everybody from Sally Kahn, who's running the Khan Academy. I mean, he talks about the Prussian education system being brought into America.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so all these major arguments that he has are accurate.
But notice how rich his it's a story. You know, that's the key here. He's really telling a story because there's so much depth to all the research he's done that just to present it in a very laborious style. Like, let's say, Foundations for Nate Wormser, you know, that's it's just a different context in which to write a book. And in this case, he's telling you a story, and really it should entice your creativity and your imagination and make you wonder, well, how does this actually relate? You know, is everything he's saying true, or is it taken out of context or any of these things? So like Rich said, he wants you to go and look up this for yourself. It's a sort of process of discovery that he went through. Just like he tells in the Ultimate History Lesson, because that 5-hour journey, it's literally a journey. It's a really a process of discovery. And you kind of see that the step-by-step that Gatto took to pretty much get to where he understood that, you know, the bad things done in schooling have been intellectually justified. And he had to kind of like reverse engineer the whole system of schooling to kind of figure it out.
Yeah, it's like this stuff was put there on purpose. Yes, it's broken, but why was it put there and what's the history? And that's what he lays out.
Exactly.
And if you're looking for an approach or a narrative that's a little bit more scholarly, I would suggest that even though he's coming at it from a slightly different angle than Gatto, there's Sam Blumenfeld, who did a lot of really good work on the
NEA book.
The origins of the NEA,
But also, like Gatto, you know, chases back the idea of justified sinning to Calvinism, and you see that the paths are interweaving in a lot of different places. But Blumenfeld is very source heavy in his stuff, from what I've seen anyway. All his books might not be like that. All Gatto's style, from the other books that I've seen, the Dumbing Us Down, and what's the other small paperback? The Weapons of Mass Instruction. That is his writing style. And I think it's enjoyable, and I think it's not overwhelming. And
it's poetic.
And I think if you're trying to make this, I mean, Gatto taught in public schools for decades, so I think he understands the importance of this message, but he also understands the aversion that a lot of people have to reading deep scholarly works that are heavily footnoted. I really like what you guys said about he's trying to launch you on your own investigation. It's certainly what happened for me. I mean, I remember when I first saw it, I was in graduate school. I said, this is ridiculous. An education conspiracy? What an interesting idea. And it got tabled, unfortunately, until I started reading somebody like John Cazole, who's a very left-wing guy, but has a very similar writing style.
The guy who played Fredo in The Godfather?
The guy who played Fredo in The Godfather,
It's John Cazale, so my bad.
Jonathan Cozol, Kozol, was a public school teacher in the 1960s. They booted him out of the public schools right quick when he started talking about racial injustice in the very racist location of Eastern Massachusetts in the 1960s, and the busing and the integration of schools and all the problems that it was causing. So he was really influential. When I was in graduate school, I was also exposed accidentally to the work of John Holt, and eventually circled back to Gatto and this investigation into the darker origins of the American public schooling system. So I like Gatto's style. And, you know, considering that the underground history of American education is in textbook form in many ways, it is a very enjoyable read. You know, and you can... I don't recommend this, but you can just pick it up anywhere. You can bring it into the bathroom with you, say. You can flip to any page, and it's broken up into nice and neat little pieces. It's good to take it, you know, as a whole chapter, but you can read just one numbered section and walk away with a few nuggets of wisdom.
There's an audiobook, too.
Very digestible.
There is?
Yep.
Yeah, these radio show hosts read the book into the record. You can search for it.
I think I know what you're getting at here.
Just saying.
Wait a minute.
No, I'm saying for real, they did.
Yeah.
Oh, it wasn't you?
No.
No.
Because I've already taken Chapter 9, The Cult of Scientific Management, and put it into the Peace Revolution podcast.
And I did a good portion of the Daughters of the Barons of Runningmede chapter.
Jerry and somebody. I'll look it up right now. I have it in my iTunes. Underground History. Jonathan, yeah.
One thing that I wanted to bring up while Rich looks for that, since you guys are both here, and I think this gets back to Artie's point a little bit, Peace Revolution podcast. I think it starts around episode 40.
40 to 45. I made it so it's easy to remember.
Here you take the audio from the ultimate history lesson,
mm-hmm.
and you guys stop every 15 minutes, and you go into what he said for those 15 minutes in much more detail.
We try to explain it, and we give references, more importantly.
So if somebody is hungry for that kind of presentation,
oh, yeah.
I highly recommend Peace Revolution podcast episodes 40 through 45,
yep.
and maybe you're looking at an 18-hour time commitment.
It's like 15 hours overall, but if you take it bite by bite,
yeah.
you know, there's 1,000 footnotes and references for that conversation over, you know, 15 hours. So those 5 episodes, you just listen to an hour a day, and you do a little research, and that way you can manage what you're learning.
Yeah.
Well, depending on how far you want to take it, you can just do 15 minutes a day. Because, I mean, 15 minutes is going to lead to a couple hours, depending on how far you want to take it.
Oh, yeah. It's a lifelong journey, so really just take your time, enjoy it. And after you listen to the podcast version, then you're ready for the video version that has 200 footnotes in it. But seeing Gatto express this stuff after you understand what he's saying is priceless.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people watch the video and they're like, I don't understand what he's saying, and they stop. But if you listen to the audio version through the Peace Revolution, where we can kind of help translate it,
you
can watch it beforehand too and then watch it afterwards. But after you watch what he's saying, when you understand what he's saying, you'll see it's history. This is, I mean, it's true history that is timeless. What he's saying will echo through America as long as it exists.
Well, I think you can relate to this, Rich. It's a sort of a process of a whistleblower. You know, he reverse engineers the whole system because he kind of got caught up with it and said, I don't want to continue hurting children. you know,
and he definitely had a message that he's delivering, and he starts out a little slow the first 2 hours, but you need those first two hours for context, and then by hour 3, 4, and 5, you're like, wow. Wow. How can not everyone not figure this out and know it by now, because it's out there, but no one's ready to
so obvious take... it's all around you.
It's ahead of its time.
I have to admit too, I kicked myself today and started, you know, lightly kicking myself after these guys put out the Ultimate History Lesson, but people were clamoring for me to interview John Taylor Gatto back around episode 15 of School Sucks. And I said, wow. You know, frankly, I just don't think he's that engaging of a presenter. I've never heard him speak in a way that I thought was really compelling. He's a great writer and I really recommend reading him. But then I think that the presentation that you guys did really brought something out of him that was exciting and different as far as what my experience had been. I will say this, though. If you want to go through those episodes of Peace Revolution podcast, it might be a fun exercise as you're trying to get your brain to work in different ways to have a copy of The Underground History of American Education with you. Stick one of those little thumbs of yours in the index, you know, while you're listening.
Or the table of contents, because it's pretty, easy to identify it either way.
Yeah. But, so you could do a two-thumber.
We had a unique opportunity, and we were able to get like Tony to come and help, and Kevin to drive across the country and come and help, and Rick flew across the country on his own money to come and cook for us while we did all the, you know, putting stuff together and getting the cameras and the lights and everything ready. And I think by the time John got here, it was just like,
I think he knew I'm sorry to cut in, but I remember you giving me a yellow package, right? You're like, this has to get to John. It has to get to John. Lisa and I are, and then I think Rick was with us going to the airport to meet John. And he's like, you have to give this to him tonight. He has to look over it. And it's like a 50-page outline or something like that of just filled with information. And once Gatto did, I mean, John looked through it and he came in the next day. And he's like, we had a week we couldn't go over this. But I think he knew the level of information and the level of depth Rich was looking for. And he knew he could kind of just let it all out, so to speak.
That's
what made it so powerful. And I think also Rich's editing. The fact that he didn't really edit it, besides the camera angles, he allowed the story to be what it was, or what it, you know, at the time, how it manifested. And he didn't, you know, we didn't cut different sections. It just was truly organic. And you could, I didn't get it at first. I thought we'd have to cut a bunch of sections together and make kind of tell the story ourselves. But after rewatching it a couple of times with Rich, I realized, no, he had a mission once he kind of realized who he was working with.
Well, there's a lot of trust in your audience too.
Well, and you know, he came in and he saw all we had done to prepare for him being here, as far as setting all this stuff up. And he's like, "This is the most, you know, most anyone's done to try to capture my image, my voice." So he knew, and I think his wife knew too, because she sent a suit for him to wear or whatever, you know, and the red handkerchief for his pocket and whatever, right? So it was like it was all coming together. He had, you know, done extensive research. Here he is in a well lit area with some people that seem to know how to turn a camera on.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some technical
issues.
It was
pulled down a little bit too.
We could do a whole show about the technical issues. Goodness. But, you know, he was like, he was on.
Yes,
he's like,
was.
This is prime time. I'm going to be on. And the editing style, really, I just cut on his action, because he does a lot of lean forward and sits back, and then he's out of focus or out of frame in one of the cameras. So you have to cut anyway. So the best is to cut on some interesting action or. So if you watch it, you'll see that. But the idea was to leave it the whole tape. Like, it's just the 5 hours of the tape from time we turn it on to the time we turn it off. Because it's interesting, whether it's seeing him sit there for 10 minutes thinking, not doing anything else, just thinking before the interview. There's all this, you know, just reality captured in those 5 hours. Yeah. And yeah, you know, some people don't like that. And they don't like, you know, you should have cut it down to 2 hours and cut out all the extra stuff. But it's like... it's part history. Here's the history. And it's part, here's how real people get real things done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's if awesome. You notice in hour two, I'm basically not in it because I was out of focus and my head was at the bottom of the frame. There was some crazy thing. Nobody had any camera training. I have, you know, friends helping me, and I didn't really have the getting things done under my belt at that time. So it was all like, do it on the fly. And it's like, Kevin, stand behind this camera, make sure the red dot's on. You know, Tony, stand here, make sure this is going on.
Make sure the headphones stay in the camera.
So. Oh, that red dot. That's essential.
I think the only thing we actually cut out of the footage was when there was an accident on the set and Lisa...
Oh, poor Lisa.
...fell. and went boom. And John was like, oh my.
Oh my. So
we cut that short part out, but that's basically all it was cut from the whole time that he was in the limerick. Mm. So,
yep.
And on the DVDs, there's behind the scenes that were extra,
yeah,
you know,
I forgot
footage.
About that.
We have behind the scenes on the actual DVDs.
Very intense conversation behind the scenes. I mean, Kevin was just schooling John in many different
Everything's
ways.
There except the ride to the airport where, again, Lisa was driving and somebody almost hit them and John went, oh my. So those are future bonus episodes,
I
guess. It was
July 4th weekend, right? You know,
yeah,
liberty.
We were well. It's you know, we weren't very independent as a country anymore. So it was basically what we could do to become independent again. Seemed like the right time to do it.
Or independent as independent individuals.
That's what I'm talking about, man. You can't be independent as long as you're dependent on the system that you're trained with to think you were free when you're not.
Independent right? System of values. I mean, that's really the core message and how they schooled that out of us.
I think that's the last thing that you said in the most recent episode of my show, Tony. And some music came in and it ended.
Wow, I have to check this out.
But I think we sufficiently answered that question. I think Artie will be satisfied. He can always call in the future if he has more, if we miss something. But I think we've provided some
that's
alternatives.
That's our position on it. It's, you know, it's John's prerogative.
Right, but I think we provided some alternatives that if he does want, you know, better, a better source presentation, then
Peace Revolution 40 through 45.
Revolution.
So 40,
or
40 through 45.
40 through 45.
Coming to the community. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have done research, started blogs, questioning some of the things John had said, and there's a decent amount of information concerning some aspects of the filming and some of the research that John did. So, I mean,
what he says is provocative.
Yeah.
Provokes thought.
It really does.
Thanks for writing in, Artie. That was a good email.
That was.
Substantial answer, too. But good question led to that information exchange for everybody.